Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to The Haunted Collection with your host, writer, paranormal investigator, and haunted collector, Kevin Kane, back with some more haunting tales of creepy terror. All right, welcome back. Episode 116. I can't believe I've come this far. Actually, I would feel like I should have more than that because I've been doing this for several years now. But when you're only doing a couple a month, that adds up, I guess. So, welcome back to the Haunted Collection. And as always, I want to invite you to visit my website, myhaunteddolls.com. You can shop in my store, purchase any of the books I've written, get your autographed copy. You can follow the link to the Redbubble store where we do need your support. Buy your t-shirts, hats, dresses, skirts, pet accessories, phone accessories, home and office accessories, all kinds of things out there. So please be sure to check that out. On the link page, you can find my YouTube channel, My Haunted Dolls on YouTube, where I post weekly creepy videos of my haunted items and the strange and unusual activity I capture from them. So please be sure to check that out. And be sure to like and subscribe. And keep on tuning into our show here, because I want to make sure we keep going with this as well. Be sure you're subscribed so you can get notifications anytime I post an episode, which is normally every 2 weeks. And now, I've been doing an awful lot of stories lately about haunted highways and railroads and things like that. And I'm kind of continuing that tonight with a story called Deadly Crossings. And it's not just a story. These are multiple stories of deadly crossings. And maybe you'll think about them next time you're stopped at a crossing somewhere, especially with a railroad. So here we go. In 1978, Mr. and Mrs. Hewitt were taking a scenic drive around the English countryside one Sunday afternoon. They were unfamiliar with the area and checked their map frequently. They saw that the road they were on had to pass over a railway line at a spot called Utterby Halt. The Hewitts did not know how frequently trains ran on the line, and there were no signals or gates at the crossing, so they approached very cautiously. But as soon as their car moved onto the tracks, it stopped dead, for no apparent reason. In spite of all he could, Mr. Hewitt was unable to restart the engine. The Hewitts suddenly began to feel frightened and feared that a train might come along and hit their car. They decided to get out of the car and get off the track to safety. But before they were able to do this, their car was hit by a violent gust of wind, which shook the vehicle, and there was a loud, roaring sound like that of an oncoming train. The combination of wind and sound so terrified the couple that they were virtually paralyzed. They were sure that a train was heading right for them. The whole incident lasted less than a minute. It was followed by an eerie silence. And when Mr. Hewitt tried to restart the car, the engine turned over immediately. They drove a short way and then stopped and went back to look at the track. It was rusty and choked with weeds. The line had obviously been abandoned for some time. They could find nothing to account for their strange experience, for the weather had been perfectly calm before they reached the track. Their story came to the attention of W.B. Herbert, a writer with an interest in the mysterious and unexplained. After some research, he discovered that in 1953, before the line was abandoned, a railway worker named Lancaster had accidentally stepped out in front of a fast-moving freight train at Utterby Halt during a dense fog. Lancaster was killed instantly. Further research indicated that a woman had been killed in a similar accident during the 1920s, and that there had been several other serious but non-fatal accidents at that crossing. Did these accidents of the past have anything to do with the Hewitts' strange experience? No one really knows. A railroad crossing at a place called Connington had a reputation for narrow escapes and deadly accidents. The worst took place on March 1, 1948. World War II had not been over for too long, and there still were German prisoners of war in England. Six of them were killed and five more injured when the truck in which they were riding was hit by a train while crossing the track of the Peterborough-London line in a dense fog. It was not that accident, but one which took place later that same year that triggered the ghostly appearances. The crossing was on a narrow road. There were gates which blocked the tracks, and it was up to the driver to get out of his car, look up and down the line to see if there was a train coming. If all was clear, then the driver opened the gates, got back in his car, and drove across the tracks. It was a cumbersome procedure, but a common one in isolated crossings during that time. There were all sorts of warning notices posted near the crossing, but inevitably, some people got careless. On October 16, 1948, at about 5:30 p.m., Colonel Mellows and his friend Mr. Percival were returning home from a day's hunting near Cunnington. They were riding in the Colonel's large black Chrysler, accompanied by his favorite dog, a Labrador retriever. When they reached the crossing, both men got out of the car. The Colonel looked up and down the line and, seeing nothing, told Percival to open the gates. He went back to the car and drove on to the track. He never noticed the high-speed express that came bearing down on him. The train plowed into the car and instantly killed the Colonel and his dog. Colonel Mellows was given a funeral with full honors. His dog was buried near the spot where the accident took place. Since that time, a lot of people, particularly railroad workers, have had strange experiences at the crossing. The crossing gate would often be found swinging open mysteriously after it had been securely locked. Several railroad men reported seeing a large black car draw up to the crossing, obviously waiting to cross the track. Before they had a chance to walk down to the road, the car vanished. It did not cross the track. It simply disappeared. Some reported that they saw this car clearly enough to make out the hood ornament, the figure of a winged lady, a Chrysler hood ornament. Those who did not actually see the car said they heard the crunch of gravel as an invisible car approached the tracks. At least half a dozen men simply refused to work at that particular location. Others took the strange occurrences in stride. Norman Jinks worked at the crossing for years. He used to walk his dog near the tracks, but whenever the animal passed the spot where Colonel Mello's Labrador was buried, it became very excited and tried to run away. Even today, when the crossing has been modernized and completely changed, local people still regard the spot with some fear. In 1935, Tom Aykroyd was put in charge of a signal box at a remote station called Entwistle Halt. He controlled the gates that allowed farmers' carts to cross the tracks. There was an occasional, very occasional, passenger at the station. The main business for the trains that stopped at Entwistle Halt was to pick up milk. Aykroyd, who was a bachelor, lived in a small house near the station. One day, he looked out the window of his signal box and saw a boy of about 8 or 9 years old running through the fields near the track. He knew most of the local people, but did not recognize this boy. Still, he thought nothing of it because the boy seemed to be behaving in a perfectly normal way. The boy appeared every weekend throughout the summer. He was a thin, pale lad, and Aykroyd suspected that he might be recovering from an illness. After September, the boy did not come back to the fields. Since the weather usually began to turn cold in September, Aykroyd was not surprised. The boy was back the following spring, though. As usual, he played in the fields, but he seemed to be coming ever closer to the tracks. A couple of times, Aykroyd saw him standing right up against the crossing gates, his face almost pressing up against the bars. Aykroyd thought he looked pathetic. He stood by the gates every evening and was always gone before the 5:13 train to Blackburn went through. This went on for several years. By that time, Britain was fighting World War II, and Aykroyd had a lot more on his mind than a strange boy standing by the tracks. One Saturday late in June, in the last year of the war, Aykroyd had just passed the 5:13 through as usual when there was a commotion up the line. A short time later, he learned that a farmer by the name of Bill Oldenshaw had fallen under the train at the crossing and was killed. The foreman of the line came to Aykroyd and said, "This is a bad business. That's the second member of the Oldenshaw family that's gone the same way." "No," said Aykroyd, I've been here for years, and it's never happened before." "Oh, it happened well before your time," said the foreman. "Bill was no more than a baby when his brother Harold, who was about 8 or 9 years old at the time, was killed at the crossing. Harold was always running and playing in the field out there." Well, suddenly Aykroyd felt a chill. The foreman continued, "The lad used to look out for his dad's cart in the evening. One evening his dad was late. Harold just stood with his face up against the gate, waiting. Then he must have seen his father and the cart, because the next thing anyone knew, he went right through the gate and across the track and right under the wheels of the 5:29 train. And now Bill has been hit by a train. It's a bad, bad business." As another chill coursed through his spine, Aykroyd agreed, but said no more. That was pretty freaky. I sure did enjoy those stories, and I hope you did too. I love a good haunted railroad story. We've got all kinds of them in America here, and especially in the South where I live. And apparently, the Great Britain has their share of those stories as well. And now we're going to switch gears for the second story. Pardon the pun, switch gears. We're going to go to a creepy car story. Oh, there's plenty of creepy haunted car stories and cursed automobiles, just like there are railroad stories and highway tales. And this one that I'm about to share with you is rightly called the Death Car. When Vince Gregory saw the ad in the newspaper, he couldn't believe it. A 1987 Jaguar for only $1,000. Vince had always wanted a Jaguar, and he could handle the $1,000, but the price was so ridiculously low that he assumed the ad was a misprint. Still, on a lark, he decided to go and check out the dealer. The address in the ad led Vince to a perfectly ordinary-looking used car lot. The salesman was a fat, jolly fellow who kept mopping his sweaty forehead with a handkerchief. "I've come about the Jaguar," said Vince. "I suppose the ad was a misprint and you're selling it for $10,000, maybe?"
"Nope," said the salesman. "The price is correct, $1,000.
"Oh, I see," said Vince. "This is one of those bat-and-switch deals, maybe? You're going to tell me you just sold the Jag, but can offer me something nearly as good and just a little more expensive, right?" And the salesman kept right on smiling.
"No, nobody's bought it yet. Car's right over there."
He waved his hand toward the far end of the lot, where a gorgeous maroon Jaguar was parked.
"Oh, this has got to be a joke. You're going to tell me this car hasn't got an engine in it or something like that, right?" said Vince. "Nope, runs real good," said the salesman.
He dangled a set of keys in front of Vince's face.
"See for yourself. Take it out for a test drive."
Vince approached the car reverently. He ran his hands over the real leather upholstery and gently caressed the wooden paneling on the dashboard. When he turned the key, the hum of the engine made him shiver with delight. This was the car of his dreams. The salesman was right. The Jaguar ran beautifully. The only slightly discordant note was that he detected a faintly unpleasant odor in the car. Vince put the odor down to the leather upholstery, possibly. He had never even ridden in a car with leather upholstery before and did not know what it was supposed to smell like.
"I'll get used to it," he thought.
As Vince headed back to the lot, he began to fear that when he got there, the salesman would be gone, and a new man who wouldn't sell the car would have taken over. But the same salesman was still there, smiling away.
"Well, I've got my checkbook," said Vince, "but I suppose you'll want me to go to the bank and get a certified check or something?"
"Nah, not necessary," grinned the salesman. "I've got all the paperwork ready for you. Just make out the check and drive away."
The salesman looked so happy when Vince pulled out of the lot in the shiny $1,000 Jag that Vince couldn't shake the feeling that the guy had just put something over on him. But he couldn't figure out what. When Vince's wife, Candy, saw the car, she hit the roof.
"Have you gone crazy? We can't afford a car like that."
When he told her it was only $1,000, she didn't believe him. He showed her the bill of sale, and she still didn't believe him. But after about an hour, he convinced her to at least take a ride in the Jaguar. That did it. Not only did the car run like a dream, all the neighbors came out to stare in envy. Candy decided she loved that car. Over the next couple of weeks, Vince and Candy took a lot of rides in the Jag, and while they were together, it was great. But when Vince took the car alone, he noticed that smell again. And every time he took it out alone, the smell got a little worse. It went from mildly annoying to absolutely overpowering. Vince tried everything. He rode with the windows wide open, and with the windows shut tight with the air conditioning going full blast. He scrubbed the inside of the car with every imaginable kind of cleaner. He had the car professionally cleaned, inside and out, 3 times. The guys at the car wash thought he was nuts. Nothing helped. The smell got so bad that Vince felt as if he was going to throw up when he drove. And it wasn't just the smell. When Vince looked into the rearview mirror, he sometimes saw the foggy outline of a man sitting in the back seat. When he turned around, no one was there. As time went on, the form became clearer and clearer. It was a man, all right, with a heavy-featured, brutal face. A face that seemed to be sneering at him. Vince began to fear that he was losing his mind. But everything was fine, so long as he didn't drive the Jaguar alone. So he began leaving it at home. He told Candy she should have a chance to drive it. At first, Candy was delighted, but then Vince began to notice that the car spent more and more time just sitting in the driveway. From the time they had first met, Vince and Candy had always talked freely to one another. There had been no secrets between them, but now it seemed as if something had come up between them. Something they could not talk about. They were sitting morosely at breakfast one morning when Vince finally said, "Listen, about the car. Maybe I'm going crazy, but I think there's something wrong."
"You too?" said Candy. "Thank goodness, I thought it was just me."
"The horrible smell?" asked Vince.
"Yes, that's it."
"And that awful face in the mirror."
"Yes, it's getting worse."
"Okay, we've got to take the car back," said Vince.
"Of course we do," agreed Candy.
The very next day, they drove the Jaguar to the used car lot. The fat salesman was standing out front smiling. It was almost as if he had been expecting them.
"You've come back," he said.
"They always come back. That's why the car is so cheap."
"Well, what's wrong with it?" asked Vince.
"I really don't know," said the salesman. "I only know what I've been told. The car used to belong to Maxie Norman, a big-time gangster. Some of Maxie's associates thought he was double-crossing them, so they shot him, stuffed his body in the trunk of his Jaguar, and left it in the airport parking lot. The car was parked there for over a month, in the middle of summer, before anybody checked it. By that time, you can imagine that Maxie's corpse was pretty ripe. It was the smell that first tipped the cops off that something was wrong. Anyway, they cleaned the car up and sold it at a police auction. Trouble was that people who bought it brought it back because they said it still had the smell of death in it, and that the smell was getting stronger day by day. That's what people who have owned the car always say. And then there's the face. You saw that too, I guess. People who have seen pictures of Maxie Norman say it looks just like him. And that was a really good story. I think I've heard that story before, maybe read it in a different book, but that still gives me the willies when I think about it. Imagine driving down the road and you smell something foul, and in the mirror you see a face staring back at you from your back seat. That is scary as all get out. And that is our episode. I hope you enjoyed these chilling tales. And I hope you come back for the next episode in a few weeks. Until then, be careful when you drive. Watch out for those railroad crossings. Look out if you smell something funny in your car. Perhaps don't look in the mirror. But by all means, have a happy haunting.